Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there, Candace.
Hey, Jane. You are a huge movie buff, and I am not as big a buff as you. I'm actually a little bit too hyper, really, to sit still and watch a movie from beginning to end. But you've written this fantastic article about 10 historically inaccurate movies. And just to give all of our listeners a little bit of background, when How Stuff Works editors and writers come up with topics for articles, we send out what we call an initial approach. And it's just a mass email that asks for people's suggestions. And every now and then, there'll be a topic that comes along that gets people emailing back and forth like crazy.
And this was one of them.
Jane had responses coming in until, like, gosh, I think 6 o'clock at night. And she sent the IA out at 8-something in the morning. And at that point, you know, case closed. She had picked the top 10 she wanted to work with, and people were so excited they were hammering her with requests.
That's right. And it's interesting, yeah, you mentioned I am a movie buff, and that's one of the reasons I think I am really interested in history. I don't know, like, I might be showing my impressionable age when I say this, but when I grew up watching the Indiana Jones movies, for instance, it really got me interested in, you know, the Nazis and even, like, ancient and biblical history as well. And I think that was really a drive that got me interested in history. And that's one point that a lot of, or at least some historians make, is that even though films can be really, really egregiously historically inaccurate, historians give filmmakers credit for at least, you know, sparking interest in history so that if you want to know the whole story, you can look it up yourself.
That's true. And I think that there are historical purists among movie audiences who want to see every single detail follow to the letter. And sometimes, you know, that's a pretty tall order. And a film that isn't exactly historical film by nature, but one that I really enjoy and have seen from beginning to end several times through, is Almost Famous. And the director of that movie, Cameron Crowe, wanted so much for his film to be accurate that he hired on Peter Frampton to be an authenticity director.
Well,
so all of these details in the movie are, you know, really telling of, you know, the era and the musical scene at that time. And Frampton actually makes a small appearance in a scene where he and some other band managers are gambling. But on the opposite end, you look at movies that are like literary dramas, for instance, that are period pieces. Gone with the Wind, or even, you know, the BBC miniseries on different Austen novels and things like that. And we see that these films can end up being hours upon hours long because people are trying to be so true to the story in the book. Brideshead Revisited, for instance, is one that just came out. And I think that there was a BBC miniseries based on the book that was 11 episodes long versus the movie theater production of 2008, which was
and
just
you can guess
two
which
hours.
One purists like, you know.
Well, and I don't know, because ultimately, it comes down to how the screenwriter wants to portray the book, and editors have to make very careful decisions about how to portray the narrative. And that's what gets historians riled up, is mm-hmm. when not necessarily creative license is taken with, you know, the art direction or how a person looks, but how the story is told.
Yeah, and you can easily end up ruining a historical person's reputation of today, you know.
Precisely. So with that in mind, we're going to talk about some real doozies.
One of the first ones Candace is going to talk about in particular, and that was Pocahontas. And this one, you have to tell me about, Candace, because I have never seen it. Believe it or not, when I was growing up, my dad forbade me from seeing it because it was so historically inaccurate. So please, please tell us about it.
And I just admitted to Jane that I was, oh gosh, this is 1995 when Pocahontas came out. So I think I was like 10 or 11 years old at that point, and I saved up all my babysitting money to go see this film in the theater.
Oh.
Not once, not twice, but five times. I was crazy about Disney's Pocahontas. And this is definitely one where the narrative has been skewed in the interest of keeping the audience engaged. And most notably is the fact that it sort of revolves around a budding romance between Pocahontas, the Native American girl, and John Smith, who, of course, is the British explorer who comes over to scout out this potential colony. And we see, as, you know, he becomes more entrenched in Native American culture, and she is trying to teach him, you know, the ways of life here and how one can't just come over and assert one's cultural values into a land that one wishes to claim, they fall in love. And ultimately, the story climaxes when John Smith is going to be put to death, and Pocahontas throws herself on top of him. And there's this, you know, very dramatic, you know, she's still a cartoon, but scene. I think her hair is waving. She's like, no, no, you can't do this. And mm-hmm. it's great, except it's, you know, all a bunch of crock, because Pocahontas would have only been, like myself when I saw the film, about 10 or 11. And so John Smith was much older. There was never any romantic interest between them. And Pocahontas ended up marrying another British explorer who was actually more in the role of a diplomat than anything else, and that was John Rolfe.
Okay.
And if you, like me, kept up with Disney's Pocahontas and saw the straight-to-DVD Pocahontas 2, Journey to a New World, you know that Disney tried to redeem itself a little bit by ending the Pocahontas story on a true note, where she
really?
Chooses John Rolfe over John Smith.
Oh, that's really interesting. I have a little bit more respect for them now.
Well, there you go.
But yeah.
Like I said, critics were incensed because here's this historical story being painted, no pun intended, painted in many wrong ways. And children are going to have to go back and relearn the real tale in school. And it was just sort of a Pandora's box of problems.
That's true. And another one that I address in the article is another one having to do with a Native American girl and a white explorer. And that was kind of a lesser known movie back in the 50s called The Far Horizons. And that dealt with the Lewis and Clark expedition, which you've talked about before. And on this voyage, obviously we all know, anyone who's at all familiar with the voyage, they know that they picked up Sacagawea on the way, and she ended up being a great help to the whole expedition. But in the movie, in this 50s movie, I love how their choice for Sacagawea was Donna Reed.
Nice.
Which, of course, you know, from, you know, she's the whitest 50s housewife you've ever seen. And she plays the Native American girl who falls in love with William Clark, which is a little curious because, in actuality, she was very visibly pregnant when they picked her up and had her join with her husband, John Baptiste Charbonneau, I believe it's pronounced. So he was there as on the expedition as well. So I don't think there are any sparks going off between William Clark and Sacagawea.
No, and from what I understand, Charbonneau and Sacagawea were sort of a twofer, to borrow the Clinton language there. They didn't pick up Sacagawea to be their guide. They picked up Charbonneau, and his wife just happened to come along because she was pregnant at the time, and she knew quite a lot about the lands they were traveling through and the people who they encountered. So she turned out to be an even greater help than her husband. And furthermore, in the movie, Charbonneau is portrayed as a villain that Clark and Lewis are up against, but in reality, that wasn't the story at all.
Yeah, that's true. Charbonneau was always a help to them, and, you know, he did what he was hired to do, and he helped them with translating and everything like that, so I don't think Clark would have double-crossed him by stealing his wife.
Not quite.
Another movie that is, I think, is the whopper in this list is The Bridge on the River Kwai, which, I'm not gonna lie, I love the movie. I think it's fantastic. And if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. It has Alec Guinness in it, and he plays this British commander, Colonel Nicholson. So Nicholson is fighting in World War II. He's captured by the Japanese. He's brought into a POW camp, and he's the highest-ranking Allied officer there. And so at this camp, they're having the Allied forces who are prisoner there, they're building a bridge for the Japanese to help them in their military campaigns. The Japanese are forcing the Allied troops to help build this bridge, and Nicholson comes along, and he actually becomes obsessed with building the bridge. He wants to make the best bridge possible, and he sort of just loses track of the idea. He's oddly oblivious to the fact that he's helping an enemy in war, and he's just oblivious to the end. And I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but you have to see it. In truth, Nicholson is based on a real life guy. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Philip Toosey, and he was the highest ranking Allied officer in this POW camp in the Pacific that was charged with building the Thai-Burma Railway. And people who saw the movie see it as sort of a slap in the face to the real-life Toosey, because it's true, Toosey was forced to help build this bridge, and he was obsessed. But he wasn't obsessed with building a good bridge, he was obsessed with keeping his men alive.
Right, and big distinction.
Yeah, he was a real hero to a lot of people. His granddaughter actually wrote a well-acclaimed book on his life and what he did. And even though he did end up having to help build the bridge, he did his best to, you know, put in a little sabotage where he could, such as, like, what they would do. They would get some white ants and they would put them in the wood of the bridge to try to get them to eat it from the inside. And he would also mix the concrete badly, so hopefully it would crumble. And he would see his men get random beatings, and he would step in and he would get beaten as a result. And so this great hero of the war is sort of like, his reputation is tarnished by this odd, you know, obsessive Alec Guinness character in the movie. So a lot of people were upset about that.
And Alec Guinness actually got an Oscar award, or just the nomination?
I think he won that year. Yeah, and so it was a big movie.
Yeah, and so when people win awards for their portrayals of historical figures, it sort of cements, I think, in the public's mind that this is somehow more authentic, or it carries a heavier weight.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes, you know, films come to the theaters, and if it's something to the grand scale of Pearl Harbor, where, you know, it's a pretty significant event in American history and it carries a really heavy cultural impact, I think sometimes people feel obligated to go see it and maybe even want to take it for what it's worth. But you can never discount dramatic effect and what filmmakers do to make a bigger punch on the silver screen. And I think that the ending of this one in particular is just, it's so laughably wrong. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, rises from his chair at the very end of the film, and that would have been completely impossible for him.
Yeah, I think my favorite from Pearl Harbor is the fact that they have one of the Japanese admirals saying a line from an earlier movie. It was a completely fabricated line from Tora Tora Tora, which is a famous movie about Pearl Harbor, and so to have both movies say it makes it seem like, oh, this must be true. People, you know, they must have said the sleeping giant line about America, when it stayed true to Hollywood, at least, if not history.
Right. And I think you can see some historical films like Shakespeare in Love, which is another one that made Jane's list, that sort of winkingly acknowledge false bits of history and anachronistic details. And not just in the way that a movie like A Knight's Tale would incorporate music that was clearly many, many, many years
coming. Yeah, I don't think anybody's walking away from Knight's Tale thinking that they actually sang Queen songs, you know?
Yeah, or, oh, he was around, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so, and I think another point to be made about this is that it's hard to make a movie that really is historically accurate, not only in the details, like what they wear and everything, but I think the moral ambiguities going on in history, I mean, we face them all the time when we talk about them in the podcast, how like these difficult choices that people had to make. And you look at someone like Toosey who had to aid, you know, the enemy at war. And when you make a movie, it's much simpler and it makes for a better story to make things black and white.
Definitely. And at least in some of the older historical films that are on your list, I think it would have been an even more complicated process of showing a multifaceted political figure or historical figure. And in today's cinema, I think that there's much more to be said about the subtleties of filmography and the way that light can betray some sort of expression that's just fleeting on a character's face, or a very, you know, subtle movement or detail can tip off the audience that something isn't quite right.
Yeah.
But films haven't always worked that way. You know, if you think back to Tora, 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 for instance, well, for one, it was black and white. And secondly, you know, it was very much done in the style of old cinematography, and you don't have room for subtleties.
And I think the public has gotten a lot more into, or Hollywood, I should say, has really embraced going after more subtleties, more, morally grays. And it's become more popular, but you get more tickets when it is something that's sort of shady and you don't really know what's right and wrong.
Yeah, so we see, for instance, represented at the very recent Academy Awards, and maybe like Frost Nixon, where, you know, these two sort of grainy, gritty characters are explored for the world to see. You know, we're not just celebrating, you know, famous historical personages of the past. We're really trying to explore what the morals and motivations must have been of some pretty unethical people of the past.
That's true.
So a lot out there for you to see, whether you want to see a great figure celebrated, like, oh, I don't know, Thomas Jefferson, or you want to see Richard Nixon's psyche explored. There's so many more movies in Jane's list that we can't cover, so you're going to have to go read the article yourself.
And while you're there, also check out the blogs that the site is launching. Stuff You Missed in History Class has its own blog written by Candace and myself, and we write about all different kinds of stuff every day, and we'd love to hear from you, from your comments, and answer your questions there if we can.
Or you can email us, as always, at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Network.